from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The topic of AI, or artificial intelligence, remains a major concern for the church and the world. What are its threats, opportunities, and its ramifications for all of us? This week on Register Radio, we're joined by Paolo Carozza, a Notre Dame professor of law, a member of the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences, who also serves on the board overseeing Meta's content moderation decisions. And then, EWTN News has partnered once again with Real Clear Opinion Research to survey Catholic voters about their thoughts on Pope Leo XIV, Donald Trump, and the pressing issues of our time. Shannon Mullen and I have a lengthy discussion. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, EWTN News' Vice President and Editorial Director and host of Register Radio. And I'm joined, as always, by Shannon Mullen. Shannon, how are you?
I'm well, Matthew. Good to be with you.
Well, as your role as editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register would indicate, you have to deal with a whole lot of issues. And I know as we've had a variety of editorial discussions, AI just keeps coming up as a major topic for our time. And I was so heartened to see the piece that we recently did. Meta oversight leader warns of new threats to human dignity from big tech. I'm talking about Professor Paolo Carozza, a Notre Dame law professor, as I was saying, and really one of the leading international human rights experts who has been grappling with the questions of AI and the threat to human dignity, so much so that he was appointed to the Vatican's Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences by Pope Francis, and also he is co-chair, as I mentioned, of Meta's oversight board that was created by CEO Mark Zuckerberg in 2018 to help restore some public trust amid accusations of disinformation and censorship. So welcome to Register Radio.
Thank you very much. It's good to be with you.
Well, there are so many issues related to AI and new technologies and the impact they're having. It's almost impossible to choose where exactly to start. But I think that the simplest way to begin is to ask you this starter question. Where are we right now in terms of AI technology? And what is your opinion of where we are?
Well, I think the only thing that's really safe to say is we're in an era of very rapid and unstable change. The environment is developing at such a pace around us that it's very hard to keep up in terms of simply even a technical understanding for ordinary people of what is being offered by the technology and what it promises. And what its possibilities are, but also what its threats are. So what it can do, but also very rapid change in terms of how it is being integrated into various aspects of social life. And so there are widely varying opinions, as we all know, about whether at one extreme we're on the cusp of developing artificial general intelligence and whether that is going to make mankind obsolete or whatever. But on the other hand, it's also true that AI has been around and being used for much longer than people realize generally. And there are also those who simply say, well, these are marginal changes and they're making some differences, but they're not dramatic. I think the truth is somewhere in between, but probably a little bit closer to the former. But the one thing that is certain is that it's very volatile right now and it's very hard to keep up with what's happening.
Yes, Professor, we're meeting today. It just came out that Time Magazine has named the architects of AI as its person of the year. So there's already a personhood issue there, I think. But in the piece that the interview that we did with you that ran at ncregister.com, you're describing how AI is reshaping how we understand the human person. That's been the focus of our church leaders, Pope Francis and now Pope Leo, really stressing human dignity. That's your clarion call as well. My big question is, there have been conferences and wonderful documents that have been produced. Notre Dame has been involved in these conferences as well. Are the architects of AI listening? and engaging in these concerns?
That's an essential question, Shannon, and I think it we have to answer it at a couple of different levels. I think there's a very broad interest in the ethics of AI, in being responsible about AI. There's really a desire both to use it for good and to constrain its potential harms. It's very widespread, even among a class of people who are very deeply involved in either developing the technology or deploying the technology in a variety of ways. And that's really heartening. I've been to a number of conferences where there are very sincere and deep questions being asked by people across the board in this, and who are eager to try to get coherent guidance and share their experience and do the right thing. At the same time, I was really struck when we had this big conference that I helped to organize in the Vatican at the Pontifical Academy back in October. We had one person in particular who was really one of the most prominent and well-known scientists of AI in the world today, and who was just fascinating in his engagement in the conversation with us. And at one point, he said to us, you know, you have to realize, you, the rest of us in the room, coming from many other different disciplines and backgrounds and so forth, he said, you have to realize that the real cutting edge of what's happening here is essentially being driven by about 100 people. And if you really want to make a change fundamentally in the core design and on the hardest questions, you have to reach the hearts and move the hearts of those 100 people. That was really arresting to me to think about it in those terms. And that at that level, I really don't know if I sense intuitively that there is a large disconnect between a lot of the broad conversations about ethics and fundamental principles that we're having and that sort of really, really rarefied scientific elite that is involved in developing the latest technology.
Yeah, Professor, you've talked about the importance of the defense of human dignity. And one of the questions that's often asked, or one of the great fears about AI, is that it is going to take away jobs. It's going to change the landscape for so many people. Can you define exactly how that works? Because for a lot of people, they have this sort of a nebulous idea of the damage that AI can do or the threats it actually poses to the human person.
Well, in terms of work specifically, I mean, we can talk about it in a variety of different sectors, and I think part of the virtue and potential of the church's contribution to humanity in this is to unite those different sectors. But just for a moment to focus on where you began, on the question of work, it's a very complicated question because I think the evidence actually shows that AI has the potential, on the one hand, to enhance certain kinds of work, to make new kinds of work possible, to facilitate new kinds of collaborative work in particular and bring people together. And that's been true of many revolutionary technologies, from the printing press to the the machines of the first industrial revolution. Mm-hmm. But it's simultaneously true that in many ways it has the potential and is in fact being used simply to substitute for human beings. So not to enhance their work, not to make it more collaborative or productive or united or more creative, but simply to replace human beings. And I think that's the fundamental distinction that we need to be asking about. Is it simply machines bringing in? I've heard some arguments to simply say, well, it would be a great thing if, for example, basic cleaning functions in buildings could be done entirely by robotics now, with artificial intelligence, and that would rescue people from the jobs that are less full of value and dignity and meaning. But then, you know, we as Catholics in particular, I think, given the long history that we have thinking about the dignity of work and how work is essential to sort of human, relationship with reality in the world, we have to ask, yes, but what about those people who are doing those jobs and use those jobs and work hard in those jobs to support their family and to provide a certain kind of a sense of self-sufficiency and support for people they love and give them the meaning of having something to do. So it's not enough simply to say, well, it's great to replace low-value work, because that means you're replacing the workers in those low-value jobs and everything that entails that work entails in their lives. So this question of replacement versus enhancement, I think, is really critical to answering that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Finally, Professor, you call in the interview you did with the Register for a collective social effort, a collective social response to AI, and you're not just talking about government. In fact, you make a point to talk about this is not just a government issue. And you also go on to talk about one of the things that really bothers you about AI, especially the AI tools that we're using, is how they sort of try to humanize them. I'm thinking about little ways that we can kind of resist or push back against that. Things like thanking ChatGPT for, you know, delivering an answer to your prompt. Is that what you're talking about? Little acts of resistance?
Well, yes. I mean, I think bigger ones too, but let's start with the little ones. Yes. I mean, even in the way we interact with the technology, absolutely. To stop and pause, am I writing a prompt or responding to a prompt in the same way that I would respond to a human being? Am I using the same kinds of terms? Is it clear from the form of interaction and my attitude in it that I am aware that I'm interacting with a machine and not with a human being? I think that is a small way in which we can retain a certain awareness and consciousness. And that kind of awareness then builds into, I think, larger attitudes when, for example, as parents, we go into schools and talk about the way that technology should be used in educating our children, right? And if that awareness erodes in small ways, then it will manifest itself in the big ways. But I'm also talking about bigger acts of resistance, organized. I mean, you know, churches and religious communities and other organizations within civil society, communities of parents and concerned citizens at local levels need to come together to ask hard questions with one another about how this technology can be used, but also how it shouldn't be used in ways that can improve and mitigate the harms to our fundamental relationships with one another.
Well, Professor Paolo Carozza, we're going to have to leave it there, but thank you for your insights and thank you for your work, especially in the defense of human dignity.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a great conversation, and thanks for everything you're doing to advance this conversation because it's so important.
Oh, God bless. Well, when we come back, Shannon and I take a look at the EWTN News Real Clear Opinion Research latest poll. I'll be surprised at some of the results. I'll give one clue away. Pope Leo XIV is very, very popular. This is Register Radio. Please don't go anywhere.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen here, as always, with Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Well, once again, the EWTN News has partnered with Real Clear Opinion Research to do a survey of Catholic voters and where they stand about a year removed from the 2024 election. The results are always interesting for those who follow the technical details of this. The survey was of Catholic voters. It was conducted from November 9th to the 11th. 1,000 Catholic voters were polled, and it has what's known as a credibility interval or a margin of error of about plus or minus 3 percentage points. But I think the results in many ways speak for themselves. What was your biggest takeaway from this poll?
Yeah, well, it is a poll of Catholic voters, so I think, you know, probably it makes sense to start with politics, right?
Of course.
So, as you said, a year has passed. A lot has happened, particularly within the Trump administration. One of our big questions was Catholic voters who supported Trump by a comfortable margin in the general election. They played a, you know, pretty significant role in his election.
We estimate, based on exit polls, and I think it's about 55% of Catholic voters supported Trump, which was a steady, significant increase from 2020, but reasonably consistent with how he polled in 2016.
Mm-hmm. So a big question of going into this new poll was, are Catholic voters still happy with Trump? Are they standing with him? The answer, I think, is
yes. So we know that in our results that Donald Trump right now has a 52% favorable rating with a 37% unfavorable and 11% neutral, which even seeing a number above 1 or 2% on neutral, everyone has an opinion about Donald Trump. So Catholic voters don't necessarily.
Yeah, I'd like to meet those people who are still making up their minds about him.
What's interesting, too, is that we asked also about some of the key figures in this administration, both of them Catholic, in this case, Vice President J.D. Vance and Secretary of State Marco Rubio. It's, again, understandable that Vance is probably at this point better known than Rubio. So he's slightly higher in terms of favorability than Rubio. But let's just say for Marco Rubio, who's our Secretary of State, 42% favorable, 25% unfavorable. But a pretty significant number of 33%, about a third of the poll, are neutral or they've never really heard of him, which, okay, that makes sense. But J.D. Vance is actually, and I think this would be surprising to some people, is polling slightly below where Donald Trump is with a 50% favorability, but he does have a lower unfavorable at 31% and then a slightly higher neutral or never heard of at 19%. So people aren't necessarily viewing him unfavorably in comparison to Trump, but they, in some cases, either don't really have an opinion of him or they're neutral.
Yeah, he's a secondary consideration. Trump takes the air out of the room, you know. There's not a lot left over for these other guys.
Yeah, but what's your sense, though, in looking at these favorable and unfavorable numbers? Are you surprised at how high Trump's favorability is?
Not really. You know, I think for the reasons that we'll get into in some of the, you know, subcategories mm-hmm. of this. But one thing about Trump, I mean, there's a lot of unpredictable things that he says, right? But as far as what he does, it's pretty much on track with what he promised in the campaign. He's pretty much following what he laid out. And that's what Catholics got behind him for. But there's some concerns on some of these other issues that we'll get into.
Yeah, the warning, if there is one, is that when we look at among Catholics what they consider to be the most important campaign promise for him to keep, it is in fact not on immigration, which polls at only 15%. It's Catholic voters think that reducing inflation is the most important campaign promise at 40%. So close to half of Catholic voters see that as the most pressing. And what's interesting about that is that when we go back to a lot of our polling over these last years, especially last year in the 2024 campaign, what was it that Catholics were most concerned about? It was the economy.
Absolutely. So that really hasn't changed. And look at that difference, 40% on inflation and economic issues. Versus 15% mass deportations. You think about the imbalance in the coverage of the Trump administration. It's really, you know, it's right. Been mostly about mass deportations, immigration, domestically anyway. But it's a paycheck issue, and that's still a big concern.
Yeah, now we can weigh in as we're starting to move toward the midterms. It'll be on us in a year, less than a year. The question, the word that we always hear now from a lot of different campaigns, especially on the Democratic side, is affordability. Inflation in particular is impacting everybody. So this in some ways is a flare for this administration, A, about what concerns Catholics, and B, what they really see as a priority. But that number of 15% for mass deportations of unauthorized immigrants as the most important pressing matter facing the country. But when we look then also at a majority of Catholic voters at 54% favor the detention and deportation of unauthorized immigrants on a broad scale, only 30% oppose it and 17% neither favor nor oppose. And then when we get into those, the internals of that, that's where it starts to get even more interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that I would say I am surprised about, because it's one thing to favor aggressive enforcement in the abstract. It's another thing to see it on your TV and on your phone every day virtually. But it's still very they're with the president on this policy right now.
And then when we break that down, as would be a logical thing to do, 60% of white Catholic voters favored detentions and deportations, while 26% oppose. Among Latinos, though, and this is, I think, will come as a surprise to a lot of people, Hispanics are split. 41% actually support these detentions and deportations, while 39% oppose. Obviously, that is a significantly higher number than among white voters. But the fact that this is split, I think, tells you something about Trump's broader appeal among Latinos and the way that this issue is dividing whole parts of the community.
Yeah, and the other thing about the Latino vote is, if I'm reading it correctly, about half as many Latinos or percentage of Latinos think it's a top priority as the general population.
Right.
So it's just not, it's economics.
It's economics, yeah, precisely. Now, when we get into some of the other issues that are confronting the country, one that we have talked about quite a bit in our polling that doesn't get a lot of attention in the overall media is things like tax-funded vouchers for being able to pay tuition for children to attend private or religious schools. What's interesting is that 65%, so nearly two-thirds of Catholic voters, favor states giving parents tax-funded vouchers. So this is a fight, I know, that has been long going on, certainly especially with the Department of Education in the sights of this administration.
Yes, and again, it's not a top priority for voters, but it is something that that Trump is sort of aligned with what many Catholics feel.
Right, and similarly, we see another issue that has come up, and that is that of eliminating federal funding for Planned Parenthood permanently. And 45% of Catholic voters favor eliminating federal funding, 34% oppose, and 21% neither favor nor oppose it. Here we start to see something of a gender divide. We know, for example, already that men tend to support overall President Trump more than women do, although he still does have a reservoir among women, Catholic women voters. But in this, a plurality of women, 40%, oppose eliminating federal funding, whereas 54% of men favor it. So the gender gap does exist even among Catholic voters.
Yeah, and the overall top line number, you see that same support relatively soft among women and much more pronounced among men for overall support of Trump.
Yeah, and we wanted to get into one of the questions that does come up on transition interventions or medical interventions for minors who identify as transgender and wish, quote, to alter their body's development. Now, in previous polling over the years, we have certainly found that a vast majority of Catholics in the 70-80 percentiles, if you just ask them the broad question about transitions and these types of things, that they are opposed to gender ideology or transgender ideology. One of the things we wanted to get into, though, with this poll was, are there sort of differentiations among Catholic voters about things like puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, or surgical procedures? And it's pretty consistent that only tiny percentages of Catholics support, for example, only 11% support actual surgical procedures, 10% support the use of puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones. Only 9% support both. A majority, solid majority of 52% of Catholics do not support either those cross-sex hormones, puberty blockers, or surgical procedures. So we are seeing among Catholic voters something that's been very consistent over the years, and certainly this cuts across not just Catholic voters, but voters in general.
Yeah, and there's a consensus there, particularly among when the issue is about minors.
Right. Yeah, so we go back to even to that, the idea of tax-funded vouchers, that Catholics are very concerned, obviously, with family life and everything else, which brings us to one of the controversies that has existed among the church with this particular administration, and that is on IVF. So what did we find in terms of this poll?
Yeah, Well, it's a mixed bag, right?
Yeah.
The interesting takeaway for me is there was a question that asked for general support or opposition to in vitro fertilization, and 54% favored of Catholic voters favored access to in vitro fertilization versus 19% opposed. But then we had a follow-up statement which explained that the church is opposed to IVF, and then the numbers adjusted somewhat. More people opposed and favored. It was kind of a mixed signal there. But explaining what the church's position did have an impact. As a journalist, that means something to me. It means, you know, we have to make sure when we report on these issues that we are making that clear.
We'll close, however, with some good news, and that is Pope Leo XIV has a very high favorability among Catholics.
Yeah, let's talk about that other American world leader.
So Pope Leo in our poll has a 70% favorable rating among Catholic voters. Happily, only 4% view him unfavorably. A surprising number, 26%, are neutral about him or perhaps don't understand, have never heard of him, that type of a thing. Well, fascinating poll, and I know that we'll be doing a lot of, as they say, deeper dives into the data in front of us. There's a lot to unpack and a lot to analyze.
Yeah, thank you, Matthew.
All right. Well, that's it for Register Radio for this week. On behalf of Shannon Mullen and our producer, Michael McCall, remember, go to ncregister.com for more news, analysis, and commentary. But thank you so much for joining us, as always. Until next week, please take care and God bless.